Blow it, microphone.
Well, I don't deserve that yet. I may in a while, and then again, I may not. You'll just have to wait and see. My name's Jim Natick. And I'm here to share with you about the changes that came about early in our history, or what you might consider early in our history, to traditions 4 and 9. Most of you know what I'm talking about. Most of you have heard that there were changes made. And I'm going to go through the process and give you a bit of the history of development of literature in Narcotics Anonymous prior to these changes. And then I'm going to visit with you a little bit about how the changes were made, how it all came about. And I'll try to follow that up with the precedents that this set and how that has altered our literature development process. And I'm going to do it, as I do it, I'm going to kind of sprinkle in my story because, you know, I've watched all this happen and participated in some of it, and it'll kind of give you a frame of reference, and hopefully it could have been you rather than me. I mean, it just happened to me because I got clean then, and I took advantage of what people said that I could do. I got clean in May of 79, day after my birthday. I used last on my birthday. So I remember when I got clean. Yeah, a lot of people have trouble remembering when they got clean exactly, and it's not hard for me. In the fall of that year, up on the wall of our meeting place, which was in a treatment center, had been a flyer for 6 months or so. And the flyer said, come to the World Convention of NA in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, the World Convention at that time was the only convention we had in NA. It's kind of hard to imagine today, but it really was the only convention that there was. And a lot of us at that home group had planned to go because most of the conventions were on the West Coast or in the Southwest or someplace that, you know, we just couldn't afford to go to. But Atlanta was, you know, if you got your tickets early enough, was an achievable kind of a place. So we all went down there, and one of the workshops that I went to and a couple of my buddies went to was on the basic text. The title of the workshop was You Are the Book. That also was the title of flyers that were distributed around the fellowship, because at that point in time, if there was a book, it was the story that you told to a newcomer. You were the book that they knew, because we didn't have a book. And a lot of us wondered why we didn't have a book and wanted for us to have a book. And what they talked about was the literature process. And it sounded kind of interesting to me, so I signed up. Now, back then when you signed up for anything, why, you had to put down your address, and you started getting mail on a regular basis. Like today, you put your email address down, and you get email all the time. That's kind of a little more convenient. But I started getting mail about all of this. And they even claimed that I was at one of the literature conferences that I didn't go to, because I put my name down, you know, and they wanted big numbers. And they were announcing the first literature conference. And it was a conference of the World Literature Committee. In reality, what that was a guy from Atlanta had got elected to the World Service Conference Literature Subcommittee Chairmanship. And he was one of these guys that saw beyond the limitations of the past. He was one of these guys who believed and was surrendered to group conscience, believed that what a group came up with was spiritual, you know, after they'd prayed and after they'd, you know, done some research. And his name was Bo. And he communicated around the fellowship with his same phrase, you were the book. So, write down your story and send it in to us. If you hear something at a meeting that moves you, that helps you, jot that down and send it in to us, and we'll save all this material and we'll assemble it into a basic text, into, you know, a lot of times they would call it an NA big book, you know, because that's the comparison that we had at the time. So they had that first conference in Wichita. Then they had the second conference. They had the second conference in somewhere in Nebraska.
I haven't got my hearing aids in yet.
Oh.
Give me a second.
Okay. That's the chairman of the second conference right there. That's right. You were the chairman of the second conference. It was in Lincoln, Nebraska. I think Nebraska.
Lincoln.
Yeah. Nebraska, right?
Right.
Okay. Got the state right. And then the third conference, these were like a year apart. The third conference was in Memphis, Tennessee. And that's the first one I went to. Even though I was listed as an attendee at the second one. Because they wanted lots of numbers. At the first conference, what they talked about and decided was how we can develop literature for NA. And they wrote a handbook for literature committees, encouraging the fellowship on a local level to develop literature committees, to write NA literature. Okay. And that handbook then got approved at the World Service Conference after, well, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but after an awful lot of haranguing, it got approved at the World Service Conference. And it was sort of kind of offered for sale when you bought literature. Sort of kind of. At the second conference, they kind of talked about how we were going to write this book, and they made the decision to write it in the format and with the chapter headings of the Little White Book. And, you know, I think most of you have been to an area committee. You know what NA service is like. You know how long it takes to get much of anything done. I mean, really done. Because we talk about it and we beat it till it's dead and then we kick it. And if it doesn't respond, we say, oh. And then somebody with a lot of influence stands up and he says, consensus-based decision, you do it this way. You know. I'll get into that later too, maybe. At any rate, that was really quite a bit of progress. It doesn't sound like it was a lot, but it was quite a bit of progress. In the meantime, several folks had sent their story in, had sent input in, and one literature committee in particular, the one that was local to this guy, Bo, in Atlanta, had gotten quite developed And there were others around the country that were formative as well, and some work had gotten done. When I went to the first World Service Conference I went to, Bo, as Literature Committee Chairperson, made an entrance. Bo was well known for his staging, you know, how he impressed you. And he walked in looking like Johnny Cash, all in black, and two guys behind him carrying a steamer trunk on their shoulders full of the input. Now, wasn't quite full, but it was where they were storing the input. And he wanted to make the impression that there was quite a bit of input. And there really was quite a bit of input. And they kept it in that steamer trunk till the fourth literature conference. At any rate, the third one was at Memphis, and that's, I know a lot more about that one because I went there. I was part of that. I wrote my story on the airplane on the way down. I hadn't submitted anything yet. I didn't know that I could write. Like I think a lot of us, I thought I was not equipped to write things down and communicate very well in the written word. But I thought, well, if I'm going to go to this thing, I better write my story down. And I did that. And after a lot of gyrations, why we got to Memphis, Tennessee, and had the Third World Literature Conference. It was the first one where, I believe, a real cross-section multitude of the fellowship participated. There were people from California there. There were people from Maine there. There were folks from Louisiana there. There was a member from Minnesota there. So the fellowship, which was basically the United States, was pretty well represented. We even made phone calls during that to Australia, to the fellowship who wanted to help participate. And what we did was we took all that input that was in the steamer trunk and we fitted that input into the chapters. Now, if everybody in this room would write something down about recovery from addiction, and you take each of those writings and try to put them together into one single piece, why, it's quite a bit of work. Number one, you have to kind of go from point to point to point. You got to sort it out and figure out what's the first set of ideas, what's the next, and what's the next, and follow in a reasonable order. The second thing you have to do is you have to meld them together. You have to put what we would call in the literature committee bridge words and bridge phrases in there. And most of you are going to write, I did this and I did that. And what the other thing we would do is say, does this apply to us? You know, or is it something we could conceive of? And we made the I's into we's. We called that the we form. I remember, okay, we had a guy, a Scotsman, who came to help. That was his heritage. You know, his parents came from Scotland, and we're talking about the we form. He thought we were talking about small. He was a member from, you know, the parent fellowship, who had been to maybe one or two NA meetings, and he came in and he danced a Scottish jig for us. And, you know, Bo grabbed him right away because he admitted he could type 70 words a minute. And we did everything on typewriters. We didn't have keyboards. We didn't have computers. His name was Roger. He eventually became the chairperson of the literature committee. He didn't have but 6, 7, 8 months in NA, but for a number of different reasons, he became the chairperson. The bulk of the bulk of the sixth chapter, which is the traditions, was phoned in from Greg P. And a lot of you, I say his last name, Greg Pierce, because he's dead. He's not with us anymore. He lived in Oregon, and he just couldn't finance the trip. So he had worked on that, along with input that had been received on the traditions, and he quoted it, he spoke it to a typist, and several of us held the phone to her ear for, I think it was 9 hours. And that phone call broke him for quite a while. There were a lot of sacrifices made. I was fortunate. I didn't need to make a lot of sacrifices. I traveled around the country in my job, so I could schedule work most of the places where I was going to go and pay for it, you know, let my clients pay for it, pay for it from the work that I did. In Lincoln, and I'll let you ask him about who it really was, folks donated blood to raise the money that we needed to get paper and pens and rent typewriters and do all those things that we needed to do. And many people, one guy rode a bicycle from California to Warren, Ohio, in order to participate. It was among the things that I've ever done in my life, it was the most bright-spirited thing that I've ever participated in. And it drew folks. Being allowed to share recovery on such a wholesale basis and be a part of something that could potentially affect hundreds of millions of lives was an honor, a privilege, and a huge responsibility. We would, before we wrote, before we discussed, we would get in a circle, and usually our workshops were 3 to 5 people, and we would pray very intensely. In the first part of the book, the prayer is quoted, but we really didn't use that one very much. The one we used a lot, we could remember. It was like, God, relieve us of enough self-will and ego that we can be an instrument. You know, we didn't ask him to take it all, just enough. And it was, I don't know, during Memphis, I stayed up 20 hours a day. It caught you up. At any rate, after Memphis, the review form of the basic text, or the gray book, was the result. And it was the first effort in the basic text to draft it into a full and complete form. And it was distributed to every group, every NA group that was known to be, to exist in the fellowship. Was sent to them by mail or hand-delivered by local people if they were on the committee. That was 600 groups. 600 groups worldwide. And you can look at this if you buy one, or I'll kind of tell you later. And this stuff, by the way, is the original uncut literature. Our group prints it, and we announce on the front of it that it's historical. It's not meant to replace approved literature. And it's not stepped on. And I'll talk about the stepping on a little bit later. At any rate, this, by the way, it's about the changes to the fourth and ninth tradition. I just want to remind everybody what's going on here. But I'm trying to give you background so you understand where the fellowship was at the time. This was sent out, and it said, we've prepared this, but we know it's imperfect. We want your input. Tell us what's wrong. Tell us what's incomplete. Tell us what more we should have here. Tell us what we should delete. And the input just came flowing in. You couldn't imagine how much there was. Tremendous amount of input. All the local fellowships had a literature committee, put together a literature committee, had a literature review meeting, and sent input in. Well, I don't know that all of them did, but a lot. And a lot of individuals sent input in. And a lot of people said, wow, this is just fine. Leave it the way it is. You know, and quite honestly, if I can't make a meeting, that's what I do. I read this book because it's just like going to a meeting. It feels like it. It sounds like it. Anyway, the input came in, and the next conference we had was in Santa Monica, California. And a lot of the people who'd been around NA for a long time got involved then, finally. Our trustees got involved then, finally. The only trustee that had been involved was Greg, and several others got involved then, finally, and took it seriously. It wasn't taken very seriously up to then, and by a certain segment, it wasn't taken seriously ever. That conference lasted about a week and was held in conjunction about the same time before or after the World Service Conference, and we began the process of factoring in the input. We tried to do what we were instructed to do. We treated ourselves as trusted servants, directly responsible to those we serve, and believed that that input was the expression of those we serve. And we drafted that through the course of the Santa Monica Conference, and then the Warren Conference, and then the Miami, Florida Conference, into this, the approval form of the basic text. This was for review by the fellowship, for you to comment on and suggest and insist that changes be made to it, or additions or corrections. This was all of your changes, all of your corrections, plus all of our creativity in making those things, because it takes a little creativity to make changes to phrases, particularly when three changes are suggested for one phrase. And I don't contend that we did a perfect job by any matter of means, but I think we did an honest job of trying our best to be directly responsible. Then this was distributed to the entire fellowship. All 1,600 meetings. You hear the difference? Actually, it's 1,800. All 1,800 meetings. From 600 in March of 1981 to 1800 in November of 1981. The fellowship has never before or since grown at that rate, tripling in size in 6.5 months. And I believe that the reason it tripled in size was the open participatory service process that we participated in. You're the boss. You have the last word. Tell us what to do and we'll do it. And it was distributed to the entire fellowship, and then at the WSC in 1982 it was approved as our basic text. It was approved to be printed as soon as possible by our World Service Office. And I want to visit with you just briefly about how the fellowship, in my opinion, everything else I've said is experience and observation and truth to the best of my ability. This that I'm going to say now is an opinion. The fellowship, I believe, treated the World Service Office as their business arm, as the place that could do things like printing and distributing and contacting and do what the fellowship asked them to do. Here's what happened. It wasn't printed by September. May was when it was approved. So what happened was that fellowship-wide, these things got reprinted. And somebody would write on the front, "Recovery can't wait," and other things like that. And if you come to the PowerPoint, you're going to see some copies of these. And they were distributed at cost by the fellowship. We kept getting excuses from the office. This happened and that happened. Then a rumor came out that the printer had absconded with the money and went back to Houston. Later we found that most of those excuses and that information was true, or probably true. It got printed just ahead of the World Service Conference in 1983. And the result of that is what we call the first edition of the basic text, which, guess what? It wasn't a basic text at all. It was the basic text as abridged by or edited by basically one person, the director of the office, who was co-signed by the chairman of the Board of Trustees and the chairman of the conference. The director of the office had a problem with some of the things that were in the fourth and the ninth tradition and arbitrarily changed those things by deleting phrases from the fourth and the ninth tradition. Now, I haven't prepared this so I can do it quick and easy, but I will do it to the best of my ability, and I'll share with you what was changed, I think, anyway. In Tradition 4, it says in the second paragraph, you remember what the fourth tradition is. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. How it was approved by the fellowship goes, one might ask, are we truly autonomous? What about our service committees, our offices, activities, and all the other things that go on in NA? The answer is that these things are not NA. Service committees, offices, activities. They are services we utilize to help us in our recovery and to further the primary purpose of our groups. Narcotics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women, addicts meeting in groups using a given set of spiritual principles to find freedom from addiction and a new way of life. All else is not NA. Those things mentioned are the result of members caring enough to reach out and offer their help. Whether we choose to utilize these services or not is up to the group. Now, here's what that one gentleman and his cohorts wanted to be removed and removed physically. The answer is these things are not NA. That was taken out. All else, other than the group, is not NA. That was taken out. Whether we choose to utilize these services is up to the group. That was taken out. You can see the implications. You can see them. I don't have to specify them. This guy's job, his paycheck, came from a service entity. And those ideas of autonomy, I would think, threatened him. Now, it wasn't the first time that he'd done this. About 2 years previous to this, the service manual for NA was redone by the Literature Committee, the World Service Conference Literature Committee. It's called the Blue Service Manual, if those of you looking through history want to know. And I don't even know of a copy of how they redid it. But they redid some of the processes of the conference and the office. And after the Literature Committee had these changes approved at the World Service Conference, the same guy changed them at the office before it was printed. Now, he's a good dude. He was my grant sponsor. He's somebody very special to me and very special to a lot of people in NA. But he's also an addict, man. You know? And he's full of self-will. Or was. He doesn't live anymore. That was tradition 4. I think tradition 9 is even more significant, although that's pretty significant. If I can find tradition 9. WSC can't find it. Tradition 9. NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Okay. Let me talk to you about what was changed here. Oh, come on. I may need to get somebody young to do this for me. The ninth tradition goes on after it discusses the ninth tradition. It says at the end, the last paragraph, ninth tradition goes on to define the nature of things that we can do to help NA. It says we may create service boards or committees to serve the needs of the fellowship. None of them has the power to rule, censor, decide, or dictate. They exist solely to serve the fellowship, but are not a part of Narcotics Anonymous. This is the nature of our service structure as it has evolved and been defined by the NA service manual. Here's what was deleted from that. None of them has the power to rule, censor, dictate, or decide. One of my best friends is a guy named Paige C. from Atlanta. And he contends that since that's been deleted, all the office has done is rule, censor, dictate, and decide. He's pretty much right. They are not a part of Narcotics Anonymous. I think that was the most threatening to the fella who wanted to change these things. One of the things that you just have to understand, I don't know, I don't care whether you understand it or not, but I had to understand in order to understand what had happened, is that this guy who was so committed to Narcotics Anonymous had pretty much stopped going to meetings. His only meeting, his only fellowship was with volunteers to the office, and he had the office in his house. He'd moved it from his garage to his house. He really felt ownership for this, and he was a prideful, strong person. And quite honestly, he spoke up about and defended the traditions most of his life to most of the people he talked to. However, in this process, he violated some of the most basic ideas in our 12 traditions and our fellowship. He gained the support of the chairman of the board of trustees, a guy named Chuck Skinner, who's passed away, so I can use his name, and the support of the chairman of the World Service Conference, a guy named Raymar, who's passed away, so I can use his name. And that conspiracy of people dirtied the thinking of many of the folks in the California Fellowship. At the 1983 World Service Conference, Page, the chairman of the literature committee, stood up and tore the basic text in half and said, "This is not our book," and demanded that it be returned to its approved form, which it was. So, the second edition basic text is the only rendition of the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous that was ever approved through the literature process of review and approval by the Fellowship of NA. It's the only one. Now, arguments can be made about some of the others, and maybe if I got time, I'll go into them. I'll certainly go into them with anybody individually anytime. For a year, we had a basic text approved by the fellowship. At the 1984 World Service Conference, the then chairman of the Board of Trustees, a lady named Sally, who had been involved with the literature process, stood up and gave an emotional plea that we honor the director of the office for his selfless service all those years, which was true, of course, and take those phrases out of the book. And the World Service Conference did the first of several things that they have done that were totally outside of their guidelines. They voted to take a 90-day poll of the fellowship on whether, you know, we should have a basic text the way the fellowship originally approved it, or a basic text as altered by these folks who knew better than group conscience. The poll was developed by a writing from someone to the pro and a writing by someone else to the con. The writing, okay, most everything else I've said is fact, not opinion. This is going to be opinion. But you can look it up yourself and see whether or not you agree with me. The writing by the office to the pro was done by a well-versed semi-professional writer, by someone who could be clear and concise no matter the fallacy of the argument. The writing to the con, or to leave it the way the fellowship had approved it, was done by a brilliant, wonderful man that's never put three sentences together that could easily be comprehended by any of you. I suggested once that he write a book entitled Cosmic Phasmagoria. He's a good friend of mine, and he's a beautiful man, but his argument was very, very difficult to decipher. And it certainly didn't reflect the facts that this was very simply something that had been gone over by group conscience. It was a decision of group conscience. People had paid attention and knew what they were doing. Arguably, it was distributed by mail to the fellowship for the 90-day period of time. And the office told us that the response was such and such, that it was in favor of the changes, of taking the teeth out of the fourth and ninth tradition. We didn't have those results available to us then, and it's possible, but I sincerely doubt that they're available to us now. So we don't really know. They claim that they're available, but whether they're original and really what they say they are, I don't know. I do know that several regions said, no, we're not going to participate in this. We're just going to withhold. We've already voted on this. It's a moot point. What are you trying to do? In addition to that, several areas in the fellowship just simply left the fellowship. They just simply went away. Many trusted servants that had been involved in that beautiful, open, participatory process that developed our basic text were extremely discouraged and left service, if not the fellowship, for a long time, and maybe they're still gone. I came back after a while, but it was kind of kicking and screaming because I didn't want to participate in that. If I wanted to be in government, I'd run for an office. You know, I mean, I do believe in service, and I really genuinely believe in group conscience, because when my group has a decision to make, we sit down and none of us know what we want to do. Maybe we have opinions and we shout our opinions out and we share them with each other, and we get all frustrated because all of the opinions, you know, have too much of a downside. And then somebody quiet from the back of the room says, maybe we ought to do this. And our loving God gets a chance to speak through us That's how group conscience works in my experience. It isn't consensus-based strong-arm bull crap. I mean, if you look in the wiki dictionary, you'll find that consensus-based decision-making is a method of coercion. It's right there. It's defined. The service committees don't make decisions. They follow instructions by group conscience. Groups are the only place that makes decisions. At any rate, that's what happened with the fourth and ninth tradition. Now, I said I'd talk about the process a little bit. After they satisfactorily pulled this deal, the people who believe in their hearts that they know better than group conscience had a venue to begin to change things so that they could protect we, the unwashed masses, from ourselves. And they've progressively changed our basic text away from what the fellowship said it should be in a number of different ways, but I'm going to read you my favorite way, my favorite set of words, because I saw it just a minute ago. It's in chapter 10, and in this book it's on page 99. That doesn't necessarily correspond to anything, because this book's a little different. And it goes, shaping our thoughts with the spiritual ideals we are moving toward, we are freed to become who we want to be. I think that's a beautiful idea, don't you? Shaping our thoughts with the spiritual ideals we're moving toward, we're freed to be who we want to be. Read it in the 10th chapter of your basic text, the 5th or the 6th, and you'll see that it doesn't read like that anymore. And I never got a chance to vote on the change. You never got a chance to vote on the change. No. The fellowship never got a chance to vote on the change, or any of the myriad of other changes that have been made. Just a little quick pitch. Our group prints the original literature in its uncut fashion, and we put a disclaimer on it all. We say it's an NA historical document not intended to replace approved literature, and we offer it for sale at our cost. This is $3.50. Gray books are $4. IPs are $4 for $1. Approval forms are $2. The real valid forced to... Oh, and by the way, this is still approved. It just is withheld. That's $1. We share them with folks. And also, as Colin Pitchin, our group sponsors two events every year. One about recovery and the other about service. We, every February, in the darkest days of the winter, we do a 12-step retreat, and we talk about recovery from addiction. Every fall, the end of September this year, the beginning of October, we do a history and traditions retreat. We talk about the 12 traditions and how they're all that we need conceptually, and we talk about the history of the fellowship, and there's always people there at this who were there, not talking through their hat, talking from experience. I invite you all to come. It's next weekend. If you like what you hear here, you'll like what you hear there even more. If what you hear here makes you nervous and you doubt the truth of it, don't come there, because you're going to hear more hardcore stuff there than here. But we have no reason to not tell the truth. Listen, the other guy that was supposed to be here with me didn't come because he comes to everything. He makes lots of commitments and he always follows through on them, but he had his gallbladder taken out this week, you know, so he really can't travel. I am glad to answer questions as long as we have and as long as we're allowed to use this room. So does anybody have a question? Hey, if you got a question, I'm going to ask you to come up here so that the recordings can hear it and give you this mic so everybody can hear it. Questions?
Matt and Amanda, and since Billy's not here, could you talk about the baby blue?
Okay. I told you everything that happened. There were a lot of reactions by the fellowship. What we know of as the baby blue is one of the reactions by the fellowship. In the first place, when we approved the book, we instructed the office to go ahead and price it at about $7 or $8 so they could kind of get financially ahead of where they were at, because they weren't anywhere. And then they were supposed to lower the price to $4.50. They weren't ever supposed to fund services with literature profits. The fellowship has never voted on that idea. That's pure self-will. That didn't happen. I guess you guys know that, right? What do you pay for basic text today? You know what it costs? Last time I heard, a price on it was $2.10. You know where the rest of that money goes? Have you ever looked at the travel expense of our trusted servants at the office or on the World War? Who pays for that? Do they contribute that? I don't think so. Are they our voice? I don't think so. At any rate, what had happened was a fourth edition got written following the instruction to the literature committee to correct some semantic and spelling errors in the basic text, which were suspect in the first place. But that was their instruction. Now, maybe I don't have the language exactly right. What was their instruction?
Edit to remove grammatical errors.
What happened was they hired a professional writer who rewrote the book. I mean, totally rewrote the book. If you ever get a chance, read a fourth edition and see how they rewrote the book, how they thought we ought to think. It'll surprise you. If you've ever been through treatment, it may remind you of that. If you've ever been to a meeting of the Liquid Fellowship, it may remind you of that. At any rate, people in the fellowship said, this ain't our book. And they went, it's the last time the fellowship ever went to the World Service Conference with an overwhelming group conscience on something, where everybody was accurately informed, and they said, put it back to the Third Revised, our book, which was almost our book with the erroneous exceptions, but the rest of it was accurate. And a guy, an outsider, a non-addict, an employee who worked for the office, stood up and said, we can't do that. We've already purchased, 4,000 of them, and Hazleton has an order for them, which shouldn't have meant anything to anybody. It wouldn't have meant anything to me if I was there. C'est la vie, motherfucker. Pay for it yourself. That's your problem, personal problem. At any rate, what the conference did was they said, what we will do is stop the conference and we'll call this a literature committee and we'll reconvene as a committee of the whole and rewrite the basic text. And the one side argued for the treatment crap, the fourth edition stuff, and the other side argued for the third edition revised stuff, and they wrote something called the fifth edition, which, as far as I'm concerned, has little connection to the basic text in Narcotics Anonymous. It does have a little. Actually, quite a little. But it ain't accurate. This made a lot of sophisticated, pure NA members pre-damned angry, because that open participatory process that had resulted in the basic text was NA service as they knew it and believed it. It's what they upheld in their local communities. It's what they surrendered to. It's what the traditions indicated our service should be. And those people got together and said, well, we'll just, you know, we can't stand this business of making a profit. People can't afford our book, especially in the inner city. So let's just do something right. So they took the third tradition, or the third edition revised. They reinserted the correct phraseology in the fourth and ninth traditions, and they printed a semi-valid basic text. And I call it semi-valid because I don't think the third revised is totally valid, because the little white book revision wasn't a product of the fellowship, didn't go out for review, and includes an erroneous idea. Medicine, religion, psychiatry are insufficient for us. No. They have no answer we can use. Medicine, religion, psychiatry. They stand in opposition of recovery from addiction, except in isolated instances. I've seen people relapse over that phrase. I've heard of other people relapsing over that phrase, using doctor drugs after many years clean because somebody gives them a damn prescription. I mean, when I was on the street as a dealer, I prescribed a lot of damn drugs. And quite honestly, sitting in a mahogany office don't make me more equipped. Having a degree from some university that doesn't even understand what the hell addiction is doesn't make me any more equipped. I guess I'm roving out there on personal opinion. I just happen to think it's recovery-oriented personal opinion. At any rate, that had a blue cover, and it was a paperback 5x7, and it was called by many the baby blue. The baby blue basic text. It was distributed at cost around fellowship for a number of years, and it can still be found, and it's still being distributed in certain places. If you want to know where to get one, talk to me after the meeting. It's very simply a valid third edition revised with the original fourth and ninth traditions. My friend David from West Virginia was dying from AIDS, and he made himself, because of that fact, point man on this. He'd lost everything. And in his recovery, he hadn't even tried to gain anything back. He'd spent his time giving it away and surviving, not taken from people, but surviving. And he made himself point man, and eventually WSO sued him. Now, I can refer you to the court documents that will validate this. But the order of the court at the end of that lawsuit has never been followed. The order of the court, and I'm going to go from memory now rather than try to quote anything, so it might be imperfect, was that the fellowship be offered the opportunity to use whatever rendition of the basic text that they decided to use after adequate information about the different renditions. That was never done. There's a couple other things that were never done. There's a lot of websites that have the court order, and I'll direct you to some of them. It may take an email to get it, because I don't know on the top of my head. Somebody in the audience may. The court order was never followed. WSO Inc. is in direct non-compliance with the federal court, and I'm not sure what number it is, but in southeastern Pennsylvania. Somebody eventually is going to retry that case. That's about all I know about the baby blue.
Thank you.
Other questions?
My name's Haas, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Haas.
I was wondering about the gray rendition to the approval to the blue. What was the time frame, and how many conventions did it take in order to be approved?
Okay. The gray review form was drafted and written at the Third World Literature Conference in February and March of 1981, and distributed to the fellowship by the end of March of 1981. It asked for input from the fellowship to draft into an approval form. That's his slick, smaller one. And it set, I think, the end of April as the deadline. I know in our experience that's pretty quick, but back then it wasn't, because there were only 600 groups. Well, and a lot of other reasons. Everybody was excited about it. People were waiting on it. So, March of 1981, the input came in late April, and it kept flowing in after that, too. And in late April, we had a conference in Southern California, so one conference. Then in late May, early June, we had a conference in Warren, Ohio, second conference. It was actually the fifth conference, but it was the second after input came in that we were drafting this. And then we had one in conjunction with the World Convention in September in Miami, Florida. The third conference. So three conferences, and a lot of work in between them, too. And then it was drafted into the approval form, which in November of 81, we all got together in Memphis, Tennessee, and redistributed to the fellowship. So from the review form, or the draft that was sent out asking for input, to the approval form, the draft that was sent out asking for a yes or no vote at the next World Service Conference, it was a process from late March, early April, to November of the same year, 1981. Did I answer your question? Okay. Other questions?
I got a question for you, Jim.
God, you're going to ask me a question I can't answer.
No, actually I can. I'm Boyd. I'm an addict.
Hey, Boyd.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
And I'm also a clumsy addict, too.
No, it was my fault.
It just occurred to me that I know that during the process of writing the basic text from Santa Monica to in between Santa Monica and Warren, there was a tragedy that happened. Okay, and I also know at the end of the Sixth World Convention, World Literature Conference, I'm sorry, in between the time that you had the final draft and then what the approval form was, there was another tragedy. And it was involved kind of the same person in the same situation. And without the names being said or anything like that, could you give us your recollection on that? Because I've researched it a little bit, but I'd like to hear from somebody who was there.
Personally, I'll tell you more, but for public consumption, a trusted servant of the Literature Committee misplaced the literature files between, remember I talked about that steamer trunk that we kept all the stuff in? Well, we kept all that stuff in that steamer trunk for a while, and that was misplaced between Santa Monica and Warren, which are the 4th and 5th World Literature Conferences. Quite frankly, we were able to replace nearly all of the material. And we divided that material among three separate trusted servants in three separate places. And that trusted servant, then let me say changed in character somewhat, or at least apparent character. Nobody can tell somebody else's character unless they're pretty intimate. And by the Sixth World Literature Conference in Florida, that person was given the responsibility of proofreading the work of the committee and sending it to the printer. That process, for some reason, didn't get completed. And the some reason was personal with the trusted servant. Because so many promises were at stake and so many lives were at stake, members of the committee went after the material, reclaimed it, did the proofreading, and sent it to the printer without the help of this trusted servant. Fortunately, this trusted servant survived all of that without using, and for that I'm quite grateful. But I think it's a great example, in my opinion, of the committee process and multiple positions of responsibility, a group of us helping each other do a project, rather than leaning on one person by virtue of a title. Am I going too long, or? Are you?
Second to take. You're fine.
Oh, I maybe had a question.
No, actually I don't. But
does that cover that okay?
It does, yeah.
I'll go into further detail with you personally. And
I'd like to hear some of your interpretations. That would be great.
Come on up. I'm going to grab this water here.
My name's Terry. I'm a recovering addict.
Hey, Terry.
It's nice to meet you. Listen, I don't know if it's really, spit it out there. A friend of mine passed away a few years ago. He had like 30 years clean. And on his anniversary, yes, he mentioned that most of all, we harmed ourselves. And in the book, he didn't want that to be put in there. And, I mean, it hit me, you know. And my question is like, still to this day, you know, I feel that mostly I harmed others. You know, I could cover up the pain that I did with myself with more drugs. You know, but the empathy that I have for the people that I caused the pain for. You got any outlook on that, you know? Thank you.
Well, I do have a personal opinion about that in my addiction and recovery. However, I don't think that's significant. I want to visit with you about why it's in the book. When a question like that came up, we would go through all the editing by the small teams and a large assembly of the whole conference. And where there was discussion, we would discuss. Where there were differences of opinion, we would take a vote. And if, in fact, 30% of the people felt, like you just said, that most of all we harmed others, and 60% of the people felt that most of all we harmed ourselves, we would go back and talk about it some more. If we got to the point of about 90-10 or something in that range, we would leave it the same or change it. But if it was something that we could say both ways, in many cases you can see that we would say it both ways. Or we did say it both ways. The most important thing to understand is that as far as we were concerned, this was only the first step in an ongoing, growing process. Not in something that would change in nature the way it did, but in something that would continue in the open participatory nature that it was developed and grow and change as the fellowship grew and changed. We never believed that it'd be written in stone or some damn thing. We never believed that it would be corrupted with treatment philosophy. We never believed that it would be overwritten by trusted servants that didn't understand their role and weren't trustworthy. We never believed that it would be changed by arbitrary individuals. We believed that open participatory process that we had developed was the most important gift that the fellowship had ever received, that service had ever received. Because we saw and felt the miracles that came from it. I'm sure there's errors in the book. I know, I'll tell you exactly where there is one. In the first step, it says, we're not only powerless over drugs, but our addiction as well. That's bullshit, guys. We never were and never will be powerless over drugs. We're powerless over addiction. That forces us to use drugs. But the misperception of being powerless over drugs, even though a lot of people, strong-willed as I am, believed that then and believe it still, we were outvoted, overwhelmed by others, so we surrendered to the process because we believed that the book would be a growing, developing process that would grow and develop as we grew as a fellowship, not deteriorate and become insignificant as we surrender to political correctness. But unfortunately, we were wrong. I want you guys to prove us right. I want you guys to rise up and make group conscience more important than coercion-based decision-making. I want you to instruct the conference and the office what they need to do rather than following their instruction, which they have no right to make. That's what I want. I'm 65 years old and I want to see it before I die, so get the hell at it, guys. Any more questions?
I'm Kevin. I'm an addict.
Hey, Kevin.
Could you tell us how the funding for like the Gray Book and the literature conferences came about? Because I know none of it, I think, came from the office.
None of it came from the office. None of it came from the conference. It all came from our participation, the fellowships, participation, and donations. Some of us donated blood. Some of us took pies in the face. Some of us participated in fundraisers, dressed up like Easter bunnies, and we did everything we knew how to do and could do in the fellowship. The fellowship funded it. The fellowship, you funded it directly with direct contributions to the literature committee. Absolutely. He's quoting what used to be our service manual and should still be our service manual, that in order to be a trusted servant, you needed the willingness and resources to serve. You weren't paid a damn salary. I mean, believe me, if you paid me a salary, I would make it mine just like they're doing. If my funding depended on literature profits, we'd be making more profit. We'd have a better book. It'd be prettier anyway. More questions?
I'm Jeremy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jeremy.
I'd just like to hear you speak a little bit more. You talked about how we have gotten away from the original text and how you did it through your own words, through self-will and whatnot. But I want to hear you talk about like rising up and making that change. I want to hear in your own opinion like how we can actually go about doing that, like logistically.
Well, it's pretty simple in reality. Most people don't know it, but the office doesn't have a valid copyright on the second edition. The copyright for the basic text was taken back from them when those changes were made by the literature committee and never returned to them. So it's not only easy, it's simple, and it will be contested. Right now there's folks, and you can hear about it here, and let me pitch this again. You can hear about it next week and at our Traditions and History retreat, where several chair people of the World Literature Committee are going to be, several members of the committee are going to be. What we intend to do is call a literature conference of the literature committee that holds the copyright and ratify or contest all the changes that have been made to the basic text. And you know those Bibles that have a strip down the side where they explain things? Produce a new one with the proper context and explanations about the changes. There were a few changes made that are valid. Very few. But there were a few. I'll give them what they deserve. And then start producing basic text for a reasonable price. Our group can buy enough that we can produce them for $350. Now, how many newcomers would be a whole lot more interested in a $350 book than one that costs the area $11 and the area is charging $15 for? Because somebody else is funding services through literature profits, they might as well too, huh? Or maybe just 11. Stay tuned. There's a website called justnafacts.org that'll probably give you more valid information than you can find at two or three of these conferences about what's really happened in NA and what really can happen in NA. There's a lot of, a friend of mine goes on Facebook and he says, and in a...